Now, I know he had this picture that I was at Stanford. Yeah, okay. I was at Stanford, but I worked there, right? I wasn't a college professor. I worked up there at SRI in one of those little basement things. I actually was doing somebody else's job because this very famous intellectual was making LSD every day in the bathtub because you had to have security clearance to get in there. And the way in which he was making it is he was stirring it with his hand. Ooh, this guy was so out there into the zone, he never left the building for 4 years, right? And he was supposed to be running the big Sperry Rand Univac four-story building, you know, lights and things. And so he said, well, hey, man, why don't you do this, right? And I just had a job. I was a student aide, you know. I mean, I was on work study, you know. And I went, sure, man, how does it work? You press this, right? Okay. So I was running a machine that cost $40,000 an hour to run. Right? You had to wear a zero temperature jacket to keep the machine comfortable. Isn't that something? You know, we all didn't. See, nowadays you have your little laptop. It actually has more power than this machine had. But they had to have this thing up there because grad students could not pass their PhD thesis unless their statistics had all the proper variance. And so they would come in with all their data and stuff, and they'd have to actually get funding to be able to have computer time to run their thing. And if their PhD didn't come up with a variant, guess what? You don't graduate. You have to start over. So I wrote this little subroutine, right? And you put in your stuff, and if it did not achieve the variant, the proper variant, it would go into the subroutine and alter all the data so that you could get the proper amount of whatever it is and graduate. Here we are down the road now, some 25, 30 years later. I keep reading in all these magazines about research done in the 60s and how it conclusively proves things. Well, guess what? There was some computer nerd at almost every university in the country that went, cool, so what do you charge these guys for this? And I said, hey, they give me $100 to run this routine on their data. And they went, cool, can I have it? And I said, sure, man, here, you know. Take my floppy disk. They were called RKO5s in those days. They're this fucking thick and that big. That's what a floppy disk, and it held a megabyte, right? And, of course, you know, I had, I don't know, maybe 600-700 of them, you know, because I didn't have a lot. you know, your word processing program took two of those. I mean, unbelievable that what they've been able to do with putting all this stuff down so small. Except one thing is why did they have to be so cranky, the people that wrote these programs? They're just fucking nasty, you know. They don't make pleasant sounds. When you turn on your machine, it should go like this. It should go, ooh, right? And even if you make a mistake, it shouldn't go like that. It should make a nice sound. It should go, aww. It should say, now, let's stop and think about it again. Now, what was that? Go back. Remember. Now, to me, the thing is that when, see, because I said to him, I said, let's go get the guys, right? Because I'll never forget, as we drove up into this palatial mansion, for lack of a better term, it overlooked Foothill College. It was on a big hill. They even had somebody there to park cars, but they didn't know how to ride motorcycles. And it was just that trail of about 150 motorcycles coming up that hill. And as we rode up the hill and we pulled up in front of this house, right, I guess it was a little loud, I don't know. This guy walked out in the front and where the valet parking people were, because these little guys, there were three little guys in little red jackets, right, with this look on their face like, and as I pulled up and I kicked the kickstand down and hopped off, the guy looked at me and he looked back at all those people and he said, and I said, you told me to bring my friends, so I brought them all. I said, I hope you got lots of beer. And I love his response. He turned around and he looked at this guy who was in a nice white jacket. He had a tray with champagne on it. And he looked at this guy and he said, get down to the liquor store and buy some beer. And as he went, kegs, kegs, kegs. And I said, imported beer. Right. But they had a wonderful time. I only stayed for 5 minutes myself. I was busy. And I did apologize, but I told him, everybody's having such a wonderful time. And I said, you know, what amazes me is how friendly your wife is. She really had a good time, though. I guess his wife was pretty bored. After all, she was only 40 years younger than he was. Some of these rich people, I don't think they really think about what they're doing. But I have to tell you, class act, absolutely class act, of all the men I've ever met is Peter O'Toole. These English, they interview you no matter what you do or where you go. You go in and start to take a bathroom, and a microphone will come underneath there and go, I'm from the Daily Mirror, and we just had a few questions. Of course, the answer was always the same. To me, but Peter O'Toole popped on TV. I had the TV on there. And by the way, English TV, I almost passed out. Well, let's just say they're all excited because they're going to have another channel. They're going to be up to six. And when you consider that they have cricket all day on one channel, right, and soccer all day on another, and then, of course, they have educational TV, right, in the evening. And then if you have a satellite dish, which you can't really carry into a hotel room, but if you have a satellite TV, you could get one movie channel. It used to be even worse. Now they even some of the channels go all night, but it used to be that TV went off at 11, right? And so did everything else. And if you go to a restaurant, you could die, because the food used to be horrible, but it's gotten so much better over there. But I was watching TV, and they had kind of a talk show, and Peter O'Toole came out, and they said something about him, and he was getting older, and they were so polite, you know, and you could see he was looking there, and they said, we wanted to ask you, and there was this ditzy blonde that they had interviewed before, and she looked at him, and she said, you know, she said, well, certainly when it comes to being an English gentleman, Lord O'Toole, you're a gentleman. Is it true that gentlemen prefer blondes? And he looked at this woman straight in the eye, and he said, ma'am, gentlemen prefer women with gray hair or silver hair. But either way, they do prefer women that have a brain. And boy, this woman, you know what? She curled up inside herself, shriveled up, and didn't utter another fucking word for the rest of the show. And I thought, I like this guy. This is my kind of guy. That, you know, to me, that it's really a bad idea for a society to set that what female maturity is a girl who hasn't gone through puberty. Because I see in the newspapers all this stuff about child porn and stuff, and I saw it coming 10 years ago real easy that, you know, it's not a good idea for us to hypnotize people with the magic box and start to putting on things like Boob Watch, this show. Have you seen this thing? This is the most brainless thing, and now it's everywhere in the world. You're in India, you know, and you hear Indian music, and the next thing you see is these jerks running down the beach. Bing, dong, ding, dong, ding, dong. Sitars, you know, and there they are running down the beach, and David Hasselhoff, who personally I think is a little long in the tooth to be wearing, a bikini underwear. I'll tell you, you know, that, but, you know, the wonders of what they can do with a little paint and plastic surgery, you know. I mean, to me, I really don't think that, I don't consider a knife a cosmetic tool. Let's just put it that way. I think that, you know, as people age, that they should have a few lines, that they should look distinguished. And I see a lot of people, especially where I am, because I spend a lot of time in San Francisco and in Hollywood, and these people because I have to tell you, I don't think that they've really mastered this thing with wigs. Women's wigs are pretty good, but for some reason they can't make them for men that don't, because I constantly look down the street and I go, oh no, he's got something on his head, kill it, quick. And it was all summed up for me by a workshop I did, and this guy, he was a nice guy, but it really was an ugly looking wig, and I couldn't take my eyes off of it, right? I kept trying not to look at it, but it was just driving me crazy, right? So I finally went inside and I said, look, just negatively hallucinate it, right? It'll be okay, pretend like it's not there, right? And I asked for a volunteer to do something, and the guy raised his hand, and almost nobody else in the audience did, you know. And I finally said, well, come on up here. And the guy ran around the corner, and they had a speaker thing like this, except it was much bigger, because it was about 3,000 people in the audience. And for some reason, he didn't turn the corner right, and he bumped into it. and the wig went like this. And it stayed like that. And he came up on the stage with this thing. And everybody is laughing and applauding, right? And the guy bows forward, and it stayed just like that. And he went up like this. And I really didn't know what to do. I have to tell you that it was like I didn't want to say anything because he didn't know. And everybody was staring at it. And so I said, well, now, like that. And I hit it, and it went like this. And I went, oh, God, please. So I went over and I said, close your eyes. And I took my hands and went on his head like this and left him there. And I said, now I'm going to use a technique I learned in India. And I kept pressing down, right? And I'd lift up my hands and it would go. And I'd press down harder and it'd go. So I finally looked around and you don't usually have a lot on the stage. And I said, and then I remembered. I said, aha. And I looked over, and there was some Elmer's glue, because we had glued stuff onto this big board that was on the back, right? They had posters, and they kept curling up, so we had put some of this stuff. So I reached over, and it was paste. That's what it was, not glue. It was paste. I reached over, and I took some paste, and I went like this, and I put it on his head, and I held it down, and I said, you may feel this cool sensation. It's just the energy flow coming in. Right? And then after I was done doing what I was doing, I said, how do you feel? He said, well, you know, I feel really different. He said, I have this strange sensation all in my head. And I thought, ooh. I looked at the label on the thing and read it, and I realized this was not just paste. And it said, do not allow contact with the skin. If it contact with the skin, wash immediately. And I went, and I suddenly realized my hand was burning. And I went, uh-oh. So I walked over, and they had a bucket with ice that had kind of melted, and I washed my hand off. And I said, thank you very much. Sent him back to his chair. And I said, oh, by the way, I said, come on up here. And I whispered to him. I said, look, I said, I don't think I want anyone to know, but I think you should go in the bathroom and wash the top of your head. Otherwise, you're going to die. And he looked up at me and he said, you're kidding. And I said, no. I said, it's just a suggestion. It's up to you. You know, if you've worked everything out with the deities and you're ready to meet them, just hop right on the bus and go. Otherwise, if I were you, I'd get my butt back there right now. And he was gone. And then he came back about 5 minutes later and he went like this. And I was talking and he came up to the front. And he whispered in my ear, I don't think you know this, but I have a toupee. And I can't get it off. See, everybody makes mistakes. So I suggested that perhaps he, I told him to run around the corner. There's a little, where we were, that in England, that no matter where you are, there's a pharmacy called Boots. And they're on every corner, everywhere. So I told him to run around to Boots and get nail polish remover. It's acetone. And I said, and pour this between your thing and it'll come off and then you can wash your head. And he went, nail polish remover? I said, trust me, I've made this mistake before. by the way, there is one thing. And anyway, when Barb came up and she sat on the chair, and I didn't realize it, that not only was she dying, but she was also going through a divorce. How's that for a combination? So I being cranky, because I noticed in this transcript, I said, now, if you want to be cranky, it's your business. She hadn't even said a word yet, but she just looked cranky. And, of course, you know, if you take something like death and a divorce, that could probably spoil your day, you know? But I have to say, it's been a couple of years that I saw her, I don't know, maybe a year later. She came and she walked up to me inside of a workshop, and she looked up at me and smiled. And I looked at her, and she said, you don't remember me, do you? And I went, no, who are you? And she told me who she was, and I thought back, and I could not even recognize her then. And we had it on film. I went and looked at the film, and I still couldn't put it together. She does not look like the same person. And here we are a couple of years down the road, and that was when she said, gee, I'd really like to put on a workshop. And I said, you'll be sorry. There's a lot of work to do something like this. I mean, most people don't realize how much work it is because everybody's got questions and then it's, you know, this and that and this. And then you have to communicate with my office. And I fired everyone years and years and years ago. And my number one son, Brahm, because his dad gave him to me, runs everything. And he's fine, and he tried hiring other people, but he just can't get along with anyone that well. And the dog doesn't like anyone either, so the dog and him run the office. Barb told me she called last night, and Brahm had said he sent some CDs. I know, by the way, we don't have enough for everybody. We have a problem with the CD machine. And Brahm was working on it, but the dog told him he had to quit and go to bed last night. So I'm sorry, we don't have enough CDs for everyone, but Barb said that if you don't have enough CDs for you and you want them, then we'll order them, get them to you, and we won't charge you shipping or anything. So I thought that was nice because she has to pay for it. I didn't mention that to her until now, but no, I'm just kidding. We finally, because a lot of people have bothered us because they don't have tape recorders anymore. And some people go, well, all I have is CDs. And I said, well, you should always save all your old technology. At least put it in the garage. I have all my old synthesizers from the old days, and now they become so valuable. I have musicians that come and go, please, can I borrow it just for a recording session? I'll give you $1,000. And I go, just one session, $1,000? Considering I only paid $200 for it 30 years ago, you know, that's a pretty good deal. But technology has a way of coming around where things that were antiquated suddenly aren't anymore. For example, I have a feeling, once again, we're going to see records, because these CDs did not turn out to solve the problems that records had. See, they told me that if I had a CD, it would last forever. It would never skip. Yeah, I'm with you, right? They get one little fucking speck of dust and a I hate that. You know, records, at least I knew what I was doing. I could take my record out, everything. And I had my stereo actually lifted the record up, right, and lowered it down. You could put 7 or 8 on there, and it would put it up, and it would play any track on any of the 7 records in any order, and it didn't have no fucking needle either. It had a laser. Perfect. Never got a scratch on them. They lasted forever. And I would have kept that forever, except somebody broke in my house and stole every record that I had and my turntable. Didn't take the stereo, didn't take the amp, didn't take the fucking TV, didn't take any of those things. Except for certain records. They left the Beach Boy albums behind. Right? I thought, which was fine with me, except I had nothing to play them on, so I could just hold them, look at them. But you'll be surprised. But anyway, so we bought this machine that makes CDs, but it's as persnickety as any machine I've ever seen. And we can make the CDs really well, but we have trouble getting the fucking picture on them. You know, and I told Rob, I said, fuck it, just write a number with a felt pen. These people don't care. And he said, I can't do that. And I said, why? And he said, because the dog will get mad. And so anyway, she got some in the mail. Last night she was talking to him, and the dog told him he had to get off the phone. But she does use the phone. She likes it, the speakerphone thing. She thinks it's great. Brahm calls my house, and you can never get through because the dog hits the speakerphone and goes, woo, 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 and hangs up. Now, I wasn't worried about this till she found the speed dialer. Right? Because I don't call that many people, but North Beach Pizza, right? And she watched me one day, right? And I'd ordered a pizza, but then the next day, the pizza guy showed up. And, you know, with that call identity thing, I guess, you know, they knew who it was and looked, because I always ordered the same thing. And I don't know what happened, because the guy showed up with all the stuff, and he's knocking on the door, but I mean, it must have been at North Beach Pizza. The person answered the phone, looked at the thing, looked it up, and went, oh, it's Dr. Bandler. Right? And he goes, do you want the same thing? Yeah, yeah. And you want the root beer too? No root beer. I don't know, but the guy showed up. He had the pizza, no root beer. Right? And I said, well, I got my pizza last night. I didn't order a pizza. Not at this time of the morning. It's a little early for me, you know. I mean, I don't get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and eat a pizza. Right? And I looked, and the dog was behind me, you know, pushing her bowl over, like, you know, yee-haw. I'm sorry, it's not for you. Okay, this morning, what I thought we would do, oh, that's right, the present. Oh, anyway, I almost forgot. Sometimes I just distract myself too much. So anyway, I thought you did real good, Barb, and I do like the fact that I didn't get here and have a sound system that didn't work. This happens all the time. I get in and there's all kinds of things that are screwed up. And you also did something which I really love. You got it so that since they have to sit here for so long, There's nothing worse than people have to sit in a metal folding chair. Have you ever been in a workshop where if you move, it goes, so you sit there and then when people get up to do the workshop, the exercises, they get up like this. Right. That to me, people's comfort and their well-being in a workshop is an important part. Because to be able to learn as much as I want to teach people in a short amount of time, I'm ramming stuff in their unconscious right and left that most people don't realize that I'm in the amount of time that goes by that you're sitting still, right, in an altered state and then having to do things and move around and do things. If you're in an environment where, for example, the air is dirty, like some of these hotels, they haven't cleaned the filters in these hotels in so long that when you find a place that where they've remodeled and they clean and the air is pretty nice, and I mean, even downtown in a city, I find that this environment's pretty good. I'd be happier if the ceiling was a little higher and they didn't have a wind tunnel above my head, but, you know, that's the least of our problems. We're doing good. Not only that, it's pretty quiet because, you know, a lot of times these hotels, you know, you're in them and it's so fucking noisy, you know, that, you know, there's always have the things like there's always guys with fuzz hats screaming all night long, you know, running up and down the halls. That last night it was so quiet in my room, I actually fell asleep. You know, I was sitting on the couch and I don't know, 3 or 4 in the morning, and I opened my eyes and it was 8 o'clock, right? And I thought, And then I stood up and my back went, But that's okay. It has a bathtub, which I like. And the water is actually, you can see through it. I was just in Scotland in a very classy hotel, and I ran the water, and it filled up. It was all brown. And I called down, and I said, excuse me, the water's all brown. And they said, oh, it's always like that. And I said, no, most of the time water's clear. You can see through it. I went out and bought my own filter and put it on. There's some kind of sludge that comes through the line. I guess, well, maybe they haven't fixed the pipes in, what, 400 or 500 years? Anyway, I thought what we should do is thank Barb, maybe give her a big hand, and I bought you a little present. I usually do that at the end, but I don't like anything that's usual. But anyway, I decided that this morning I was thinking, what weird thing could we do? The nice thing about intros is you can experiment. I know a lot of people think, well, you must give people all the basics. But I don't think that's a good learning strategy. I like to give people great big pieces, and then they can go back and pick up the little ones later. That to me, I know in this area that that I have a trainer in Milwaukee. I have a couple of trainers here in Chicago. I mean, they're all over the place now. It used to be just me in a house by myself with a leaking roof, you know, writing about stuff. And Jay Haley said, when he reviewed that thing, he said, well, he wrote the publisher back, and he said, obviously, whoever wrote this book does not understand Gregory Bateson. Well, Gregory, at that time, was writing the introduction to the book. And Gregory wrote, these guys succeeded where our projects failed. Jay Haley also said that we did not understand the most important thing about communication is to relativize it to the speaker. So I took his whole letter and relativized it to him and sent it back. He's never spoken to me since. But the thing I did is I met somebody who is at the Training Institute in Washington, D.C., where he teaches family therapy. And I said, oh, I said, I've never seen Jay Haley see a family. I said, is it good? And they said, well, he doesn't see clients. I said, then how does he teach you to do it? And he said, well, he teaches us to do it. And I said, but he doesn't do it himself. And I said, sounds like a priest teaching you how to have sex, isn't it? Well, Catholics do that. They go to these weekends, right, before they get married and learn all about sex from people who don't do it. Weird, huh? Sounds like a lot of therapists I know that are teaching people about how to be happy and then going home and sitting there, and they're the most depressed people in the world. Every time I teach a big workshop, somebody comes up and hands me their card, and it says on it something like this, Center for Sexual Dysfunction. And I said, do people really need to learn this? And they said, no, it's, I wanted to be able to have a private session with you. Now, if every day you get up and you go to the center for sexual dysfunction, what is your unconscious going to think? I wouldn't want to do that, right? I recommend you change the name. People keep giving me the card. It says they're an alcoholic counselor, and I'm always telling them to get help. Palo Alto has the Center for Mental Retardation. That is not a good name. Come on, guys. Word magic is very powerful. Just think of a small amount of words that I say and people and how intensely they respond. If every day you drive by a sign that says 1 hour pain clinic, that's like drumming up business, isn't it? I mean, to me, that when I was at Stanford, they brought me there because they wanted me to do hypnosis and pain control. They brought me to a place called Pain Center. It says a big sign on the front of it, Stanford Center for Pain. And boy, was it, let me tell you. Plus, most of the people in there can't take drugs. They're allergic to codeine and all these different pain control drugs. And some of them, they can be helped with inhalation therapy because they don't digest the drugs. They breathe them. It's different somehow. But there was one guy in this place that had terrible cancer. And they literally walked in the room and they said, we wanted to find out if you could help this guy have some relief. And they all looked at him simultaneously, 7 or 8 of them. And the one guy said, because he's dying. And you could watch his whole body go like this. And the other guy said, yeah, he said, he has episodes of pain that I can't even watch. It's so excruciating. You could watch the guy doing this. And I said, shut up, will you? And I smacked him right in the mouth. And the guy went, that hurt. And I said, well, you deserved it. I said, I'm just trying to be helpful, just like you. I said, this is not how you help people. I walked up to this guy and I said, are you tired of dying yet? And the guy said, I can't tell you. I said, my death will be a relief. And I said, no, the relief comes before the death. I said, and the death doesn't come until you and your deity work out. I said, no doctor can tell you exactly when you're going to die. I said, what if you're in here for 50 fucking years? Do you want to hurt the whole time? And the guy said, no. And I said, well, fucking stop it then. And the guy sat up and he went, who are you? You're very rude, you know? And I said, feel better? And the guy went, God, for a minute, I didn't have any pain. And I said, see, now, if you can do it for a minute, right? I said, imagine if you were as big an asshole as me, you wouldn't hurt at all the time. And the guy said, you're right. And I said, now, let's try a little experiment. And I grabbed the guy who had said that, right? And I pulled him over. And I said, you see this guy here with a white lab jacket on? I said, I want you to try this. And I turned around and I looked at him and I said, fuck you, asshole. Right? And the guy went, what? And I said, just shut up, will you? And I looked at him and he laughed and he said, fuck. And I said, no, got to do it right. And the guy went, fuck you, asshole. And he went, why does that feel so good? And I said, I don't know, it's something about the white lab jacket. And exactly what is the white lab jacket for? I worked in labs where you wore them because stuff splattered on you. This makes sense to me. There is no liquids or anything. In fact, there was nothing in this place. There wasn't nothing to make the mind even wander. Now, I know Milton had tried with somebody who was dying of cancer, had terrible pain. He looked at this guy and he said, if you were to suddenly look under your bed and there was a gigantic tiger looking at you and licking its chops hungrily, how much pain would you feel at that moment? Right? And the idea being that you can't maintain multiple things. Consciousness has a limit of what it can process. And if you're inside your head going, God damn, I better get the fuck out of here, you're probably not thinking about it. How many of you have cut your finger and didn't notice, and when you noticed, then it hurt? Right? Well, this is the thing. This is where you go, whoa, I bet that hurts. See, if you look at it and you go, painless cut, much better choice. Now, I explained this to this guy, and I said, now, look, pain is a message to tell you something. Sometimes it's very hard to shut off. Believe me, I know. I have broken every bone in my body at one time or another. I'm a little accident prone. Now, that stuff about me blowing up the schools, that is not true. I'm not the only accident-prone person here. Sorry, you're a little responsive. When I say accident, stay away from the table, will you? If anybody's looking for a good hypnotic subject, that's it. Oh, I'm sorry. It's just a coincidence. By the way, all teasing aside, maybe not all of it, but the guy I kept teasing because he made the comment, you know, well, I don't believe that when I said I thought about people and they called on the phone, did something which I respect more than I respect just about anything on this planet. He went home, thought about it. When he woke up the next morning, he thought about his girlfriend. He thought about the times he thought about her and she called on the phone, and he never talks to her in the morning. He, like me, is not a morning person. And bam, she called him on the phone. Now, this is the way in which I learn. Whenever they tell me this thing, and they lay it out for you, they're so methodical. They go, well, you know, we've tried everything with this guy, and nothing is going to save this guy's life. It's unfortunate, but his cancer is at such a rapid and advanced rate that I'm afraid that there's no help for him. So if you could just give him a little relief from his pain. And I'd always go, well, you're part of the AMA, right? The American Medical Association. As according to you guys, there is no such thing as hypnosis. And they said, well, that's not entirely true. They said in 1955, we did decide that it could have some value in hysterical conversions. I went, okay, anything you say. I can do that. All right, you, get your cancer out of here. I can't take it anymore. And patients respond to this stuff so good. It's like they start laughing and laughing. And, of course, what does laughter have with it? Endomorphins, right? And I suddenly turn around and I go, do you feel less pain? And they go, yeah, I don't feel pain right at this moment. And I said, your cancer's running away. Okay, cancer, step aside. We're coming in. Now, I know it sounds stupid, but how come this guy who's supposed to die, Barb, who's supposed to die, aren't dead? This guy's been alive for 22 years, right? He left the Center for Pain. and went home. Well, apparently there was some spontaneous remission. I hear about this all the time, every time I work with people, right? And, you know, the thing is I can never take credit for it because I'm not the one inside the body. And because my policy is, if anything's that serious, do everything. I say, get the fuck out of your bed, get some fucking acupuncture, eat all the fucking herbs you can find, right? Get yourself, you know, I mean, who cares who the hell fixes them? What matters, as far as I'm concerned, is life and quality of it. Because I don't care, if I only have a minute left, I ain't spending it in a hospital. You know, with me, I mean, they had to get me unconscious to get me in, and then typically they want me to leave because I don't stay in bed. Excuse me, but I don't work for them, right? And that's my policy. And as long as I have wheels on my IV, I'm moving. For example, I actually was pretty impressed. It had been a long time. I hadn't been in the hospital since I was, I think, 17. And I rolled a Harley doing about 130. Not a good idea. Don't recommend it. But somebody pulled out in front of me. Oops, they didn't see what color the light was. So they put their brakes on. So they not only went through the intersection, they stopped in the middle of it, right? And then looked this way. And so all they saw was a front tire of a motorcycle hitting their window. The motorcycle stopped. I didn't, right? You know, and they say humans can't fly. That's not entirely true, right? I remember thinking at that moment, I'm flying. See, people tell me, well, if NLP is so good, how come you can't make it so people can fly? And I always go, well, you can fly, just not for a long time. We'll go up on the highest building and you'll fly for a while. And then you'll never ask a question like this ever again. Trust me. But I actually thought the food was pretty good. But when I woke up hungry. And, you know, I'm one of those people that forgets to eat a lot, and I've had to change that for myself because it wasn't good for me. I mean, sometimes I would go days, you know, and I would think an hour went by because I was involved in something. See, to me, the more you concentrate on things, the more you can really enjoy them, no matter what they are, whether you're playing music. To me, if you're watching a movie, you should watch the movie and shut the fuck up. You know, I don't know how many times I've said that in a movie theater. And, of course, that's why they give you those big sodas and hot coffee. Because if people don't, I say, oh, okay. And I go out and get myself a nice big thing of hot coffee and go, now, I'm going to ask you one more time, can you be quiet? And if they say, mind your own business, I go, oops, I'm sorry. Right, because I found out if you pour hot coffee on the crotch of individuals, they go home. Because they're too embarrassed. I learned this from the astronauts, say. There's something. So I always carry liquids with me everywhere, because if you throw it on people's crotch, and they, for some reason, they don't do anything, because then you stand back and you go, look, everybody, he peed his pants. You know, and I don't care if it's the biggest, toughest guy on the face of the earth. They suddenly go, no, I didn't. It's really, he threw Coke on me. It's not. It's really, it isn't. And we go, well, everybody gets scared and pee their pants once in a while. Don't be ashamed. You'd be surprised. You can get the biggest, toughest guy on the face of the earth to back down. Because it's all about changing your attitude and your belief system. If you look at the world as a place to play rather than a place to be afraid of, then what happens is you begin to change the way you interact. Now, I want to try an experiment to show you how important the inside of you is. Whether you work with clients, whether you're talking to your son, whether you're with your wife, whether you're trying to meet somebody so you can have one. The thing is there's too much fear on this planet. I can smell it. My dog taught me how to. And with a nose like this, I don't miss much anyway. That, you know, I'll go into a workshop and go... And I'll pick the person who's afraid out, and I'll look at them, and I'll go, you. You know, because I love the smell of fear in a workshop as it disappears. Because as soon as you realize that in order to have fear, you have to do it. That's the thing. When I asked you the first day which way the fear was moving, as soon as you just literally turn around and create for yourself the sensation in the opposite direction, then this is a lot better way to turn your fear into strength. Because I don't recommend you turn your fear into courage. Courage is a funny word. Courage means you're making yourself do things you don't want to. And that means you're going to do stupid things. When you turn your fear into strength, and you do it yourself, not through walking across hot coals or any other thing that you don't need to do, you don't need to jump out of an airplane, you don't need to jump off of a telephone pole, unless it convinces you not to be afraid in the first place of things. Not to wait till you are afraid and do them anyway. Hey, look at that snake, because I'm going to start the cobra experience. And this is where you go up and kiss a cobra. Right? And I'm going to have trainers only do it. Should cut down the number of trainers, I would think, immensely. Because you know how you really do the cobra experience? You say, I'm not doing that. Instead, if you go, this will really make me a better person, it'll make you just the kind of person that I like, a dead one. See, to me, that when you sometimes ideas sound good, but if you really stop and think about them, it's not really such a good idea. That to me, like the idea of taking your clothes off and having it not matter, right, to all these people at Esalen made sense. You know, but I ended up having so many of them as clients because they were frigid, impotent, and unresponsive. They spent so much time learning to be unresponsive, they succeeded. See, to me, if I take my clothes off, I want to know it. I recommend you do the same. You should know when you're naked, don't you think? And you go, oh, it doesn't bother me at all. Well, it doesn't bother me sometimes, but I don't care if it bothers me or not. I want to make it so that it's special. To me, I'm looking for how to make every single moment more special. So I wanted to try a little experiment. Now, normally I do this in more advanced workshops where we're trying to teach people things that have to do with covert communication. But I think that you'll find this interesting because what I'm going to try to do is to teach you how to throw thunderbolts. Well, I heard about this guy Zeus, and I like the concept. Now, the kind of thunderbolts that I want you to throw go like this. What I'm going to do is have you get back into groups of three, but I want person A to sit across from person B, and I want person C to sit so they're first facing person B, but slightly behind person A, so you can't really see this person, right? Now, what I want person A to do is I want you to go inside, and I want you to do this very, very, very intensely. What I want you to do is to go inside, and I want you to think of something that happened to you that you considered to be one of the peak experiences of your life, right? Try it now. Go inside, and I want you to see what you saw, hear what you heard at the time of one of the most fantastic experiences of your life. And it's very important that visually you're in exactly the same position you were then, because if you see yourself in that memory, you won't feel it. But if you see what you saw at the time, hear what you heard, and then I want you to turn the volume up slightly, turn the brightness up slightly, double the size of the image, double it again, and when you feel the feelings begin to come into your body, then do the thing we did yesterday of whirling them around. When it gets to the peak point where it would start to dissipate, pull the feelings around to right where they start and begin to whirl it and whirl it around fast till you feel it in every single part of your body. Now, when you do this in the exercise, what I want you to do is to close your eyes, turn a little bit to the side and do this, and then I want you to turn forward and look at person B, and I don't want you to say a fucking word. And I want you to watch what happens to person B. And when you see person B suddenly change, I want you to look over at person C, and you will notice that they change too. Now, you pick the experience, right? You haven't said a bloody word. I want you to turn around to person C and ask them how they feel. Have them pick one word. Now, you'll be very surprised at how appropriate this is, because as much as science tells you all this ESP stuff is nothing, I got news for you. I can scare somebody into a total piece of shit to where the most tough guy in the world hasn't got the courage to look me in the eye, because I just breathe at the same rate. I go inside and I pick the most terrifying experience of my life. I pick it up and I whirl that fear around. I open my eyes and I look at them. And the minute their change is there, I anchor it and I go back into any of the state I want to be in. And I'll tell you, I can scare away even IRS auditors. Now, the thing is there's more going on. You see, if you're a scientist, you have to have a theory and you have to know why this works. If you're like me, I'm a modeler. I don't have to know why anything happens. I don't have to know why it's a chocolate cake. I just have to follow the fucking directions and cook it. Now, I'm a modeler. All I build for you are little tiny cookbook things that say, if you do this, I don't know why, but it works. Right? So if you go into some place and you look at a beautiful girl or a handsome guy and you feel lonely, and you feel helpless, and then you feel afraid and you feel nervous and you look at them and you feel nervous. Weird. They get up and walk away. Guess who did that? You did. They probably started to feel really nervous and shy and left. Now, I know all the times in your life, and by the way, guys, I would like to point something out for you. I know this is a tough one, but when you look at a woman in the place and she looks away and twirls her hair, that is not a no signal. I like this guy went, it's not? No, it's not. If they didn't give a shit about you, they wouldn't pay any attention at all. They wouldn't mess their hair up, that's for sure. Oh. I did a flirting workshop, and I had women, 100 of them, line up, and 100 guys across from them, and I said to the women, I want you to either give a yes or a no signal, non-verbally, and I had the guys hold up a finger like this, if it was a yes, and two fingers if it was no. 25 times in a row, over 97 of them got it wrong. You can't randomly go that bad. This is beyond a statistic. This is a pattern, okay? This means that guys in our infinite intelligence have managed to take all the yes signals and make them no's. This is why I like to point this stuff out. Pick the dress with the woman in it, okay? They don't go out and they don't have you reading fashion magazines now, do they? So that's not really what it's about. And guys are simple-minded, see? And ladies, explain this stuff to them. They're, you know, it's like, you know, we watch football, for Christ's sake.
And then now the ball is 5 feet further down the field, okay? Right?
You know, me, you know, it's like, I tried to enjoy playing football. And I just have to say two things. One, I only weighed in high school about 94 pounds, so I really was not cut out for it. But I'll tell you, you know, they handed me that football in P.E. I said, you know what I did with that fucking thing? I got rid of it. Somebody hands you that thing, people jump all over you. They'd hand it to me, and the first guy that'd come up, I go, here, take that. And everybody'd jump on him. And they'd go, well, yeah, but we lost the ball. And I said, now nobody's going to jump on us. We won. We get to jump on their ass. And they go, but what about the score? And I said, is it dollars? I said, now you make it dollars, I'll care about it a lot more. But excuse me, those professionals get paid to do this. I'm here because they made me come here. I said, you know, me, when I was in high school, I liked playing music. It seemed like a really good deal. I got paid. This was the 60s. Think about it. In the 60s, being a musician, right? Now, I could have been a musician or I could have been an athlete. I actually was a fairly good athlete. I was the first person in my high school, in my graduating class, to ever get a letter sweater. I did wear the letter upside down, however. I got it because I had done karate for 15 years, and when they had wrestling, that made me very good at cheating. The martial art I learned was not a nice martial art. It was not self-defense. And if the person seemed like they could win, I could hurt them so bad they had to give in. I knew how to do things with my fingers. I know things about the human body that you wouldn't believe. I know what chiropractors know to do one way, I can do the other way. Really easy. It's the same stuff. I know places on the human body that you can touch that create so much fucking pain with so little pressure. It's unbelievable. But then I know places you can touch that create so much pleasure. I've had people look at me and go, it's my body and I never knew about that. See, to me, they haven't explored, but it's not just that you touch somebody. It's what you're doing. Here it counts. See, to me, one of the things that made me interested in hypnosis is I don't like this fucking thing about meditation. It fucking takes too long. You know, there's these transcendental vegetators, man, you know. They're there mantering away, you know. I'm there looking through their backpack. I want to go into the samadhi states, but I haven't got the time that it takes. I'm not going to meditate for 40 years to get one high. That's not a good deal. Now, if our brains, what I liked about hypnosis was I saw people hypnotized, put into a state and told to do things, and they could do them. They could control their heart rate, their blood pressure. I saw one guy, an absolutely unbelievable demonstration. The stage hypnotist put this guy into a trance, right? And then he had his wife in the audience, right? Write a number on a piece of paper, and he asked this guy what number it was, and the guy got it right 10 times in a row, right? And then he had his wife think about a particular time and place that they went. He said, pick a vacation. And the woman wrote down a thing on this little thing, and he said, okay, he said, now, pick one that was better. He said, pick one that you really enjoyed even more than that, right? And she started to write, and the guy said it out loud. And then he said what the other one was. Now, they put him out of trance, and they tried the same thing, and the guy couldn't get anything right, right? In fact, he asked the guy, he said, let me do this. He goes, when's your anniversary? And the guy went, it's in May sometime, right? And then he went like this. He went, sleep. The guy went, and he said, when's your anniversary? And he went, May 16th. We were married at 2:30, right? Now, if you have memories, I've hypnotized people, age regressed them back to the age of 5, had them sitting on their dad's lap, reading a book, and they could read, see the book, and read the letters out of it, when they couldn't consciously remember having ever been read to by their father. Called their father on the phone and said, did you ever read The Little Choo-Choo Train? And he goes, oh, yeah, I read that, lots of books, but that was when he was really young. And he said, but I bought him that book on his 4th birthday. Now, if you can do it in trance, my question is, what the fuck's going on? This is where all of this design human engineering came from, is that I want people to be able to do those things. I don't care if you can go back and read The Little Choo-Choo Train, but if you want to remember things in the future, you need to have a new way of putting them in. See, for example, if you want to be able to remember people's names, you have to have something that makes it so important when you first meet them that, of course, you'll remember it. You can't go, oh, your name's Scott, your name's Bill, your name's George. Oh, sounds great. Blah, 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 blah. Have a beer, blah, blah, blah. And then 2 years later, look at somebody and go, oh, yeah. Because there's nothing to input it. You have to make it so important that if you stop and you look at a person when you first meet them and you notice whatever's distinctive about them, the shape of their nose, maybe the tip of their ear, it doesn't matter what it is, and magnify it in your mind till it's way out of proportion, then ask them their name. And when they say it, write it, repeat it in your head, right? And then take that picture and move it backwards. Look away, wait, and look at them and see that it happens automatically. Then, from that day forward, you will always remember their name. Now, this is not natural, okay? This is not what naturally happens. It's something that's designed. It's artificial. But, boy, does it work. Now, you want to learn to play an instrument? People always go, well, you know, I'm not musical. And I go, excuse me, no one is, right? When you hit a person, no sound comes out that's really that musical. When you are walking through nature, you do not find an electric guitar, okay? Right? All of you who wear glasses in here, excuse me, but they measured your eyes against the only non-naturally occurring thing in the universe, two-dimensional letters. You do not find an R in the forest or a P, let alone a flat one. So these glasses are designed, right? Now, you'll like this. Very weird. A guy in Philadelphia designed a different kind of lens. Remember, optics was the field that said it knew everything. So nobody's even looking. But this guy was dissatisfied. He was completely blind except, you know, for small amounts of light. He designed a lens by which he can shave and walk without a guide dog or a stick. However, he can't read a word. Can't see letters. But he can see objects well enough that he can shave without cutting himself, all kinds of things. That when I met him, and he's now very rich because the patent was purchased from him by a company he thought was going to manufacture these, and guess what they did? They stuck it in a drawer because what do they make? Lenses. There's a machine that was made which I saw and used. Very cool. Made by a company called Holoscan. Holoscan invented a device that makes x-rays absolutely obsolete. You lay up against a thing that's standing upright that's like a waterbed, and they press another thing that's like a waterbed right over you, and they hit that waterbed with an E-flat. And the other one, they hit that E-flat with another E-flat, and it creates a dispersion pattern in the water, which is translated up through a little microscope thing on the top of the water, the reflection on the top of the water, which is reconverted into an image on a TV screen, And they can start at the surface of your skin and look all the way through and all the way back just by turning a knob. Absolutely incredible. And the people who make it manufacture x-ray machines bought the company outright, the whole damn thing. Put it all in the basement somewhere. This was 15 years ago I saw this machine. And since then, I've had enough x-rays that I can glow in the dark. Now, I think that that this is a misuse of patents, and I believe we need a new law. This is where we all need to write our congressman and say that it's okay to buy a patent, but if you suppress a patent, you lose it. And I think that you should not be able to own a patent and keep the rest of the world from having things that would make our life better, period. Especially since it's a Japanese company, right, that bought this, they should realize, hey, you know what? They sold everybody x-ray machines. If they manufactured these things, they get to sell everybody a new machine. That's the same thing they do. Yeah, I bought all those cassette machines, and then they said, well, you don't need cassettes. You need this thing. And it's like, you know, first I had a videotape, now I have to have this one, and now they're going to sell me another thing now. They're coming out with something else. They know to do that. I sure wish they would do this with x-ray machines. We don't all need to be nuked on a regular basis. Although I do love my microwave, though. I think microwaves are the coolest thing. They fascinate me. I just stick stuff in it all the time. I'll go by it. It calls out to me, goes, Richard, let's cook an orange, see what happens. How many of you had to put metal in one? Because it says you can't. You're my people. I went down to the store, took aluminum foil, crunched it up, stuck it in the microwave, pressed the button. Don't use your own microwave. You know. For heaven's sake. Light show, man. Bang, dang, 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 dang. Anyway, I tell you what I'd like you to do. Okay. Because this, I don't want this to be a long exercise, but I want you to do two different ones. So when you're person A, this shouldn't take us a long time. This should be pretty quick. I want you to go into, and remember, look away from the person for a minute. Go into the most powerful state. You feel like it's pouring out of you. And then I want you to turn and look at them all at once. Don't say a word and notice what happens and look over here. Then ask that person, did you feel anything? And if you look at them and they look totally different and say no, you succeeded. And I don't want anybody to anchor this, okay? That would be manipulative. And I would recommend that while you do this in this group of people, please pick something that's pleasant. I know some of you are therapists, and when you go into the past and memories, that your thing is to dive right in the garbage can. I know I say, think of something from the past, and people go, oh, my father's beating me. Okay, we don't do that, all right? Right? We figure, you know, he beat you enough already, okay? So that the best thing to do is when you go back and you think about things that are unpleasant, then see yourself and push them way off in the distance so it never hurts you again, okay? Right? Even if you're a psychotherapist or a psychiatrist, it's okay with me. You hurt enough. Here, what we do is we want to make it see so that in the future, because there's a trick to what I'm having you do. I'm setting you up in case you didn't know this. I always am. My theory is that what I'd like for you when you leave here is to take the six best experiences you ever had and to make them the bottom line for what you're willing to feel in the future. Now, that's possible. Believe me, I know. I live this way. Now, this doesn't mean you don't ever get mad. It means that you make a new way of getting mad that's a lot of fun. On the inside, you're experiencing great joy as the rest of the world is climbing into their asshole. So this doesn't mean you don't get to be angry or you don't this. It means you start to make new ones by which you don't have to go into stress. You know, this is one of the reasons why people who know me get unnerved when I get quiet and smiley. Because they know I'm going into a state of total calm, but Mount Vesuvius is about to explode. Because on the outside, I can go into utter and total rage. And on the inside, I'm going, I need to get bread, and let's see, I need some butter, and oh yeah, maybe I should get some paper plates. I'm so tired of washing dishes, and our dishwasher is broken, yeah. Oh, and as long as I'm furious on the outside, maybe I should call the dishwasher repair guy again. See, there's really no reason to raise your blood pressure and make yourself sick because somebody fucked with you, don't you think? I mean, if somebody really abuses you, you should feel really good and make sure it goes in the right direction. Okay, so what I want you to do is just take, this shouldn't take long. Take 6-7 minutes a piece, one, the other, and take a little 10-minute break and meet me back here at 12:35. Okay? Go for it. so I'll be around.
Much better. Yeah, my pleasure. It's just hurt me to look at you. See, you have to learn not to stand like this. Thing is gravity, it pushes down. If you always zero yourself when you sit down, find out, make yourself go a little bit to the right, to the left, forward, back, find that point of zero gravity, then you won't end up with that thing where your shoulder's like this, right? After a while, you start to feel like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. That, and people have to learn not to reach over the seat of their car, too, because it unattenuates your ribs, and then you get a little pain in your shoulder like that. This thing's so fucking weird. But you know what I don't like about these? You can't drive with them. Because when I get high, I like to drive, you know, and I find it's really hard. I bought one of those things and tried driving around with it, but it was really hard. But see, I have an old car, so it still has that thing so you can, that sticks out so you can know where the curb is, right? Feelers, yeah. But when you're going 60 miles an hour, you don't really have time to adjust. Okay, when you guys did the exercise, let me ask you, okay, you looked up and you went, bam, did you notice a difference right away in the way they looked? Okay, now, it goes like this. I know I've had some of you have come up and told me that you've been through NLP training. Okay, you can be helped. Okay, let me point something out. When you elicit a response for any of the stuff that we're going to do, okay, here, and I'm hoping that since this is an intro, some of you will realize that there's a lot more, that this is kindergarten we're dealing with here, that you'll take some training. There's lots of good trainers around. I know Barb and Steve are going to do a workshop, and Steve's been going to workshops so long, I don't even know when he started. He was there, but he never grows up. What's the deal with him anyway? He looks exactly the same as when I met him, you know, years and years and years ago. It's like he's permanently age regressed. So any of you who want to learn about youth, this is the guy to go to. Because, you know, somebody walked up to me in the workshop we were doing sometime last year, and Steve and I had just been talking, and he walked up and he goes, "Is that your son?" And I said, "No, my son is much taller than I am." I said, "That's my son." And the guy looked at him and he goes, "It couldn't be your son." And I said, "Yeah, sure he can, you know." And then I looked at Brahm, who is Oriental, and I said, "And that's my son." And he looked at me, he looked at that, and then he looked at my wife, and he went, and she winked at him. And I anchored it. See, to me, a lot of times, because I have to tell you the funniest thing. I was in Tucson, and I was doing a thing with the military. And I got up in the morning, and I walked downstairs, and I was going to get some breakfast, and I couldn't help it. I walked by those signs they have in the hotel, and it said NLP practitioner training. And I thought, gee, that sounds interesting. So I walked down the stairs, and I walked in, and I opened the door, and I peeked in. And there was somebody doing a demonstration of anchoring. And it was really funny, because they told everybody in the room, they said, "Now, when you're going to do anchoring, the thing is that you really have to look closely, right? I mean, because these changes in people, they're very, very difficult, very, very subtle. If you don't have great sensory acuity, you won't be able to see the things that you need to anchor." And I thought, I didn't know that. Wow. Can learn something. So I sat down inside the door and I thought, gee, you know, I've been doing it wrong for years. So he said, he turned around and he looked and he had this person sitting there and they were just goofy as could be. They were like this. And he said to this person, "What I want you to do is to think of a time you were really excited." And the person went, "Okay." And the guy went, "Now, if you look really closely, you can see these minute color changes in the skin."
And the audience all leaned forward and squinted like this. And I thought, this guy's going to make all these people blind. And I raised my hand and I said, excuse me, sir, but I don't see a fucking thing. And he looked back like this. He didn't even notice that I wasn't in his group. And there was only 20 people in the group. And they're all in the front of the room, and I'm way in the back. There had to be 30 feet between me and the people in the audience. And he went like this. He said, well, he said, you're going to need to look closer. And I went. And he went, that's good. Anyway, then I decided to humiliate him because I didn't know who he was. And if I don't know who somebody is that's a trainer of NLP, they must not be very serious about it. I'm not dead or anything, you know. You know, I'm doing workshops all over the fucking planet all the time. And I mean, to me, when I wanted to learn about nuclear physics, I went and found one of the best physicists that was building nuclear plants, knocked on his door at 2 a.m, and I went, hi, Max. And he went, who are you? And I said, you'll understand soon. I said, now, I said, I have some questions about, and I pulled out a piece of paper and I said, I read these articles and I said, and I wanted to know blah, 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 blah. And he went, that's a really good question. Come in. Right? And we sat down and in the next week, we built a nuclear power plant this big. Because I said I wanted to build one. And he said, well, I'm not building one now. And I said, can we build a little one? And he said, well, you know, if we did, he said, you know, I mean, the control room, how are we going to? I said, well, we'll just run it from a computer on the outside. But I said, you know, I just didn't have to make, even if it just makes one bolt, I want to know, you know. And he said, where are we going to get the plutonium? And I said, I brought some. That stuff I learned as a teenager paid off later in life, you know, that breaking in and out of stuff. But to me, it's like if somebody is serious about something, you do not need to squint to anchor because you shouldn't anchor anything you can't see. We're not trying to get people to have minimal responses. They're already really good at that. If you say to somebody, think of a time you were excited, how are they going to get excited? See, I walked up to the front of this room and I looked at this guy that was sitting there and I said, excuse me, sir. I said, let me ask you something. Was there a time in your life when you suddenly got really excited? Every pore of your body opened up and you began to feel yourself breathing heavy and you knew this was going to be the opportunity of a lifetime. One of the most powerful experiences of your life. And his skin changed color and he went like that and I went and anchored it. Right? And you don't have to squeeze somebody's fucking knee off either, by the way. Right? Because then you have to go back and squeeze it later. You know, you can make the subtlest sound. It's all about the way in which you're relating to the person, the angle in which you move, the way in which you approach them. All of this is anchors already. You've already got the people in your life anchored, but most of the time people have them anchored in a way that gets them just what they don't want. You know, kids are always walking in, and they look at their parents and go, ah, like that, and the parents go, fuck you, kid, right? And they were just going, because they were going to have to ask for money again, and now their dad's yelling at them, not a good time to ask for money. You know, the trick is that you have to make some of those. You wait until your parents are in a really good mood, see? And then you walk in and you go like this, you go, right? And then when you walk in, you go this, and their hand floats to the wallet like that. Ask my daughter, she knows. See, it doesn't bother me. I enjoy it. I don't care, you know? I mean, to me, it's always that thing where people are always going, well, isn't NLP manipulative? Excuse me, manipulate means to move from one place to the other, deliberately. And to me, I find it rather odd that therapists and analysts tried not to manipulate their clients. Well, they did succeed. To me, I think that's really a bad thing. I think they come there for you to influence them, and you fucking well have an obligation to do it or give them their fucking money back. It's just that simple. To me, when they come in, I tell them flat out from the board, I said, you come in and talk to me, it ain't going to be the same because I don't stand for it. I said, you're going to change or you're going to die while I'm trying. It's just that simple. You know, I mean, to me, my policy is I do it this way, I do it that way. But What you did nonverbally got something you can see. Now, once you can see it, guess what? Now you know what the best anchor is. Think about it. You don't even have to elicit it. You already did. To me, when I told you what I thought the best trance induction was, and I looked at her and just went into a trance, she went right with me. Human beings are so responsive, I don't understand what the problem is. They take people and they go, well, I'm terrified of an elevator. Well, I bring them over to an elevator. I go, like this, right? And I do it because I want to see it. I want to know how it works. Then what I do is I get them into another state. I have them see themselves in an elevator looking afraid and say, don't you look like a fucking idiot? And they'll laugh, yes, I do. But guess what? They're laughing and seeing an elevator at the same time. I already beat them. That's the trick behind everything, is humans can learn that fast. Then I have them turn around and look at the elevator that's there, and they start laughing. And I said, well, wait a minute, I thought you were afraid. And they go, well, I guess my fear's tired today. They really say stuff like this, by the way. I know some of you out here, you know, have been doing NLP for a while. Isn't it funny how you do this? And they look and they try, like how you go back, feel that fear that you used to have. I want you to try and feel it in vain. One of my favorite sentences. And they'll go. And what's funny is, before they were fighting to not be afraid, now they're trying with every fiber of their soul, and they can't find the fear. And they do this. And the fact they even try is hysterical. Right? Now, if you're able to just change your internal state and create something you can see like that, imagine if you add to it a few words. Now we're talking power. You see, I wasn't teaching you to do something that's ESP. I want to teach you how to elicit responses that are the ones you want. My philosophy is very simple. The response you get is the one you get. Not that nonsense that I keep reading in NLP books about, you know, an innate system of machines and blah, 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 blah. That's the law of requisite variety. The truth is what you get is what you get, and if you don't like it, you got to get something else. And as long as you think you're the cause of it, you can, whether you are or not. Because as soon as you take everything and put it inside you, because if you walk up and go, well, I'm here to help you. Now, so I want you to think of a time you've been really happy. Hurry up. People say, well, I can't right now, you know, or else they go, well, I'm thinking of it, right? And you go, okay. Now, why aren't you happy all the time? What stops you? People go, well, I don't know. And you go, well, you know, what would happen if you were just happy? Be happy. Basically, inside their head, they're thinking, fuck you. And they should be. Because if you can't do it, how can you ask somebody else to? When people come in to me, usually they're terrified out of their fucking minds. They've heard such fucking rumors you can't believe. I hear some of this stuff and it scares me. You know, and I don't understand it because basically I'm a pretty nice guy, especially to my clients, you know. I mean, I can turn mean, that's true, you know, because anytime I see somebody hurting children, I turn into a four-turd fucking dragon. I beat the crap out of somebody in the supermarket. I saw them slap their kid and knock him over, and I walked over and beat the fucking bloody piss out of him. I beat him senseless with a can of peas. Right? And, you know, and when the store manager and everybody came over, and I kept picking the guy up and going, okay, you misbehaved. Whack! I said, does that work? Let me ask you, does that work? And they go, no. And I go, let's try it again just to make sure. Whack! Does that work? Right? And I was just trying to help the guy to learn, that's all. Right? And his kid was sitting there, and he kept coming over, and he goes, don't hit him, it's wrong. And I said, well, you understand. I just want to know. I said, is hitting people wrong? And he looked at the kid and looked at me, and I went, oh, he's got to do it again. But here's a kid. He knew it was wrong. I didn't know it was wrong. I feel bad about it. But I'd do it again. The thing is I figure it's too late for me. But, you know, I don't see any reason to, you know, to hit 4 and 5-year-old kids and stuff. But these people are so lost inside their emotions. And when they go to therapy, you know, people going, well, probably this relates. Probably you were abused as a child. Now, I want you to go home and get your photo album from when you were a child. Some of you in here know where this is going. This guy, yes, yes. And what they do is you take your photo album and they go through the photo album like this and they go, and they go, who's this? Right? And they go, well, that's my Uncle Fred. And they go, you're sitting on his lap. Oh, you don't know how this is induced? This is how this is done. And they go, look at this. The same man is bathing you naked in the tub. Well, you were 2 years old, man, and you were dirty. What is he going to do, bathe you clothed in the tub? See, obviously, somebody was there taking the picture, like mom. So there really isn't a problem now, is there? But these fucking perverts, right, they believe everybody was raped as a child, and so they install these memories. And it's not hard. I do it all the time with people, but I put in good memories, right? I put in memories, and people go, well, you know, I've never been the kind of person who stood up for myself. And I said, good, well, then we'll go back and you can lie to yourself. But if you do change history, I like people to know it's made up, right? Otherwise, they start being the kind of person who goes, well, I didn't sign that contract. I'm not the same person I was then. That's just lying, and that doesn't get you anywhere. What people need to do is not change the past. They need to change the future. And the best way to do it is to make it so that automatically your feelings drive you to where you want to go. That's why I don't want you to fight your way through fear. What I want you to be able to develop a fetish, an absolute. Now, let me ask you this, because I want you to try a little exercise with each other. I know some of you have that hungry look on your face, but I'm not hungry yet. Oh, suddenly I feel hungry. Hi, dear. How you doing? My stomach's starting to growl. Well, what do you say we take an hour and a half for lunch, huh? We'll do that silly old exercise when we get back. So I tell you what, let's take an hour and a half. Meet me right back here in the middle of somewhere, and we'll continue then.
Like a true Got the motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure. And whatever comes our way.
You guys, she just told me people were coming up and asking, do we get certificates for this workshop?